about having Buc-ee's right there, knowing there's 16 locations. You head over to Renton from here, push that car in. Now, you don't realize it. Your car breaks down, it just messes up your entire life. You can't get anywhere, and then the bills pile up. It's nice to have them come in, give you a good estimate. They stick to it. They fix the car. You're back on the road again.
So reassuring to know that Buc-ee's is there.
You wake up, you jump out of bed. First thing I say every morning, I go, hey, Buc-ee's!
Buc-ee wind at my back.
Always. Always right there. All right, let's see. I always think it's so stupid that the President of the United States has to go around to these places that and be the healer. Come on. But anyway, that's
well. It helps sometimes. Maybe not with
tornado
this.
Hit, and then he's going to walk around for a photo op, or he's going to hand out diapers, or be seen, you know, hugging somebody. It's like, kid, lordy.
Well, I agree with you, especially with this president. There's some people that are really much more, you know, the compassionate type in chief.
Yeah, they're better
Trump
faking
isn't that.
It. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. No. I'm just saying the point of the here we got the structure of this. The press loves it. Oh, the White House says this, and the White House is flying there, and the White House. And it's like your executive branch of the government. You just do your part. You don't need to be the healer in chief or some other thing.
Well, I think the Ronald Reagans of the world would disagree with you, yeah. Mr. Republican. I mean, the thing is there that was one of his strengths was that he managed to speak for the nation even when it was divided. There is something to be said for rhetorical skills.
I'm not talking about sitting behind the desk and reading the teleprompter of a beautifully written speech by Peggy Noonan. I'm talking about getting on a plane, flying somewhere, and then making sure the press shows up so we can, hey, can we get some pictures of this and that? And you can just wait a minute so we can present this thing in such a way that the healer in chief is now there. You are not the king. You are not the demigod. You are not anything. You're in the executive branch of the government. Just do your job. You have a limited amount of power. That's all.
If ever you wanted a case in point to prove your point, the president we have now is doing that.
Right. And I love the fact that he lowers the bar every single day for what our president can and cannot do. The Ohio senator, how do you say his first name? Sherrod Brown.
Yeah.
And the Dayton mayor, Nan Whaley. Or Whaley, talked at a press conference about Trump coming to visit.
Both of us spoke with the president right when he got off Air Force One. Both the mayor and I asked the president to call on Senator McConnell to bring the Senate back in session this week to tell the Senate that he wants the background checks bill that has already passed the House, that he wants it on the floor. I asked the president to promise to me and to the American people that he will sign that bill after he's spoken out in support of it with Senator McConnell. He was only said that we will get things done.
Both the senator and I spoke very directly what we've been saying the whole time about the need for common sense gun legislation.
Okay, yeah, like that's going to do it.
Well, actually, it might. I mean, there is some movement on that, and you have... The president gets ahead of himself or gets ahead of his advisors by saying things like, I'm in favor of universal background checks, and then the NRA comes and talks him down on that. But I do think that when something like this happens, Donald Trump wants to get something done, and it sounds like the Republicans are hoping they can just get by on the red flags business. But I think there is some movement afoot, and the president said yesterday, he says, listen, if we're close to a deal, because the Democrats are trying to get the Republicans to come back out of recess, if they're close to a deal, he'd be happy to call them back, not that that's his purview, but still, there is a possibility of some movement.
77% of all, Mother Jones did a great analysis of, they took at 141, I think, a mass shooting, mass murder. It's better off to call it murder than shooting. Shooting makes about the guns. Mass murder. It's a human-on-human crime. So they looked at 140 some of these. They found 77% of them, the person had obtained the gun legally. Four times, the person had illegally obtained the gun. And most of the times, I think it's about 14 times or something, somebody got the gun from a relative, right? But overall, the majority of them, so your universal background check would close the loophole, right? The private citizen to private citizen
loophole.
Over the
internet kind of and gun show.
Right, that's one person giving to another. Yeah. And then three of the shootings, somebody stole the gun. So it's, you're really not going to do much, but it makes these people feel like they're doing something so that they can run on this so they can continue to keep their job. I'm sorry I'm so cynical today about politics. I don't know what it is. It's a bitter pill I've swallowed. Here's Brown. He didn't want to meet with Trump.
I didn't want in any way encourage the president's racist talk. in divisive talk. I came because Mayor Whaley asked me to come, and I came because I thought maybe I'd have a chance to talk to the president about mental health issues, about not cutting Medicaid, and I'd get a chance to talk to the president about putting pressure on Senator McConnell to ban assault weapons.
Assault weapons. Trump wasn't happy with Brown. So they did a big press conference, and then he went after them. This is such small stuff off of the main.
But also, it's inaccurate. What the president was told about what they said was not what they said.
They shouldn't be politicking today. I had it with Sherrod Brown. He and the mayor, Man Wally, they asked to go in. Could we possibly go in and make the tour with you? I said, yeah, let's do it. They couldn't believe what they saw, and they said it to people. They'd never seen anything like it. The entire hospital, no different than what we had in El Paso, the entire hospital was, everybody was so proud of the job they did because they did a great job. And then I say goodbye. I took them in at their request. I get on Air Force One, where they do have a lot of televisions. I turn on the television, and there they are saying, well, I don't know if it was appropriate for the president to be there, et cetera, et cetera. The same old line. And they're very dishonest people, and that's probably why he got, I think, about 0% that he failed as a presidential candidate.
Okay, throw that in there.
The thing is what we didn't play is that they actually said no, that they thought the people that met with the president were really thrilled to meet with the president. I mean, it was positive stuff, but the president sounds like he was told, oh, they're trashing you, and he misunderstood or misrepresented what they really said. They said, no, the people there, the victims, the hospital staff, they all seemed really happy that the president of the United States, bothered to show up. So it wasn't an attack on those grounds. But
Montgomery County is where Dayton is, and I looked up to see who won in 2016.
Yeah. Ohio was one of the crucial states that went Trump's way.
Right. In Montgomery County, he got 48.7. Hillary got 47.1.
Okay, yeah, so just really close.
Eked it out there in Dayton. Okay, listen, if you can attach this attack to Donald Trump, he has to spend a lot of time trying to combat that. So that's what you have. The same thing that Clinton did when he connected the Oklahoma City bombing to Rush Limbaugh and the divisive voices that were being heard across America. You want to take a calamity like this and dump it on your opponent, whether it's true or not, and then you just sort of try to wrap them all up in it and then make the person struggle to get out of it.
It certainly seems easier to do in this case just because the mass shooter adopted the Hispanic invasion language of the president.
He used the word invasion, right?
The Hispanic invasion, yes, which was, remember, it was just like three or 4 days before the shooting where he was at that big rally about, oh, you can't stop him. There's this invasion. What are you going to do? And someone shouted out, shoot him. And then everyone kind of laughed, and he said, only in the panhandle. It's like, that's that kind of rhetoric that if I was the president, that's the first thing I would say is that, listen, I'm going to cool my jets on that. That's not being helpful. Instead, he's...
Well, you're asking the president to think quickly on his feet command a use of the language.
Yes.
You don't have that. Yes. Biden criticized Trump. Okay, here we go.
This president has
By the way, what did Cory Booker say? That there is a... He is directly responsible, something like that. It's a moral equivalent. Directly responsible for the shooting in El Paso is President Trump's fault. But here's Joe.
This president has fanned the flames of white supremacy in this nation. His low energy, vacant-eyed mouthing of the words written for him, condemning white supremacists this week, I don't believe fooled anyone at home or abroad.
I know white supremacists. I worked with them. They were friends of mine.
That's right.
His energetic embrace.
But he is right about Trump.
The energetic embrace of this president by the darkest hearts and most hate-filled minds in this country say it all.
All righty. There you go. See, just tie him to it. Sink him with it. Anything else you want to say on it?
I just think that it's he's such a small man that he sees everything that he does, I think, through the lens of how he comes off.
Yes.
Like, oh, I had more people at the hospital than Beto O'Rourke.
Why does
he do this? I know. It just is every time you think he would rise to the occasion.
Do you think at some point there would be this epiphany where you'd break beyond your own sort of self-aggrandizement? Do you believe that all of a sudden he would be awoken, his consciousness would be awoken, yes or no?
I think it could be drilled into him to be awoken. For instance, that speech that Joe Biden was mocking, That speech was a well-written speech. I gave him credit for that speech. It actually sounded humane. It sounded like the kind of response we'd expect. So clearly there are people in his staff that know what he should say.
Yeah.
He just seems incapable of doing it on the fly. And I would think if his staff could get a little bit better control of him, he actually could win the day on this. Instead, he stumbles through it and makes himself, I think, look worse than better.
Here's the thing. If you have someone has written something for you, mm-hmm. So let's say you're an actor and someone has written it. You then take the script. Now, what you need to do in order to interpret that script is you need to empathize.
Yes.
You need to figure out what is the author trying to say?
Yes.
What's the playwright trying to say? And what is the character particularly trying to say? So now I need to get into the skin of not only the playwright, but this character and what this character represents for the movement of the story.
You sound like an actor, John.
All right, well, what do you know?
I know.
Okay. The guy can't do it because it's not in his DNA.
He's a reality TV star.
Right. It's my. I'm not going to take your words because in order for take your words, I'm going to have to become someone other than myself. He doesn't feel the need to become someone other than himself. So when he reads it, I'm sure he doesn't like having to read it.
Yeah.
When he reads it, it just comes off as like, I don't care whether or not I get this part. Because he doesn't want that part.
Yeah. He's auditioning for a different play entirely.
Why do I need this little part? I've got a bigger part, which involves me. I voted for the guy because I hated Hillary Clinton. Yeah. And I believed, hey, just put somebody else in there and reduce the position of the presidency to the point that people realize, hey, look at this. The economy's moving along. We've got all this noise going on, although I think it's really bad for the country. I'm in the middle of reading a new book by Arthur Brooks called Love Your Enemy. Oh my God, it's amazing.
Really?
Yeah. And he says, if we don't do something about what's happening in this country, we are in some serious, serious trouble. And he explains how to go about it. He went and spoke to the Dalai Lama. He spoke to our friend over there at UW that does marriage counseling.
John Gottman.
Gottman.
Yeah. Huh.
He talked to Gottman. Think of it like a couple that's struggling. How would you bring them to the table to save the American marriage? It's a great book. And I'll be throwing out bits and pieces of it like I did with Persuasion.
for the next 3 months.
I just can't think of any right now. All right. Let's get to the fact that you want to talk about the white nationalist, Tom, or are we done enough on that? Yeah.
Well, no, it's a great article. I think we might have time for it.
So the Atlantic talks to this guy who was a white nationalist. Yes. Then he got out.
Neo-Nazi.
Then he got out. And now he goes around and tries to pull people out of this. So he's got a great perspective of where it was before the internet, what happened when the internet got in place, and how these guys get funding, and then how you can ever turn the tide in order to stop this.
It's really disturbing. In fact, it starts off with the intro, starts off with the concluding comments, and I'm just going to throw this out just to make sure we get to it. He says, do we really think that there are not any white nationalist airline pilots?
Mm.
He just throws that out because he says, there are white nationalists everywhere. They're cops, they're librarians, they're everywhere, and they're kind of hidden. And so when you realize that your airline pilot could be a white nationalist, how does that make you feel? That's the kind of attention that we should be bringing to this issue. Now, he talks about this was in 30 years ago. He joined the neo-Nazi movement. He was only 16. He says, I came from a loving immigrant family, but I didn't really have any sense of identity. And that's what these operations provide you, is this sense of identity. He says, I didn't grow up with any hate. It was kind of taught to me as a way of, oh, this is how I can identify with people. He eventually got out. He says, after 8 years, how did he get out? Because he started meeting the people that he supposedly hated and realized, hey, they're like people. It reminded me a bit of Dan Savage's comment when he was trying to push for gay rights. He says, the best campaign that the gay community has is to have every American meet a gay person. Because then you realize they're like 99% more like me than not. What are we so outraged about? And he says, back when he was there, they had to have face-to-face meetings, so recruiting was really difficult for these white nationalists. The internet has now made it so easy that you don't even have to leave your bedroom, and you can communicate with somebody in New Zealand and around the world. And he says he thinks that one of the most effective ways of dealing with this kind of how do we keep a handle on white nationalism is this deplatforming idea. Now, that causes all sorts of free speech concerns, but he says that is one of the most effective ways to do it. Another disturbing thing is it's almost impossible, he says, to talk a group out of their groupthink, that this has to happen on a one-to-one basis, and he says that is really labor-intensive and very scary. Do you have anything else? Because he does have this pothole theory, which I also find
fascinating. Hit the pothole theory.
Okay. So the pothole theory, he says, is that most people that join these kinds of extremist groups have a hit a pothole in life. It can be some kind of trauma. It could be, like a sex abuse situation. It could be like they lose a job. They could something that bad that happens in your life. That's a kind of pothole. And he said sometimes even privilege is a pothole, that you are so wealthy and have so much money that you just have no meaning in life. If you think of your life as potholes, what you have to do is acknowledge the pothole for the person there. So he has these one-on-one meetings and he tries to find out, so what makes you so angry? What is it about your life? Well, this happened and that happened. And you'd be sympathetic. You're a sympathetic ear and you help them get out of the pothole instead of digging that pothole deeper. And he says, every one of us has potholes. It's just the deeper ones end up putting people on the fringe, and that makes them dangerous. And he's afraid things are going to have to get a lot worse before they get better.
I do. I have time for this. Okay, this is an example from that book, and this is an example that this guy's talking about pulling people out and getting to know who that other person is. Okay. He also talked in this about the guy that hated Muslims.
That's
so
right.
He sat down with an imam, and they're talking and chatting, and all of a sudden, hey, you like that? I like that.
I like Chuck Norris films. You
like,
do,
hey,
too.
Hey, I do, too. He said,
bonded
after
over
an
Norris.
Hour, they were like, hey, you're
yeah.
like they'd known each other all their lives.
Exactly.
Right. This is the Black Lives Matter activist. So there was a right rally that was happening. You ever see this video? It's unbelievable. There's a right rally that was happening on the mall, and they invited the guy in charge, saw this guy with the Black Lives Matter shirt on, and invited him up onto the stage. So he comes up onto the stage, and he says, I am an American. And guess what people do? They cheer.
Okay.
Then he just sort of lays out everything that they agree with. And he's getting cheers. A couple times he gets a little pushback, but he says, listen, I love this country. You love this country. He just kept hitting one point after another, which they all had in common. Then you start to move away from the point you have in common. You might get a little bit of friction. Then you go back again. But he stepped off that stage. People were hugging him, coming up to him afterwards. And he ended up, meeting people. And the folks that were sitting there. Now, of course, he didn't convince everybody.
Yeah.
But he convinced enough of them that they would realize, okay, so that's not really the enemy. Who is the enemy? Well, the enemy is a little harder to define. Yeah. And we're all going to have to work together in order to do that.
This guy's argument is that the enemy is the psychological potholes. Trauma, abuse, mental illness, poverty, joblessness, even privilege, he says. All of those have, we like take a hit. And when that happens, it's how we cope with that hit. When you establish sympathy, empathy, communication with somebody, you don't. He says the one thing we've never been able to do is prove somebody wrong by telling them your facts are wrong.
Yeah. Don't ever do that.
You have to sympathize with the person where they are and then bring them out with you.
I found some of it. Here it is.
It's the fact that you have the right to have the message.
There could be a curse in this.
I am an American. And the beauty of America is that when you see something broke in your country, you can mobilize to fix it.
There's not a black guy in the crowd. The only black guy is the guy on stage.
So you ask why there's a Black Lives Matter? Because you can watch a black man die and be choked to death on television and nothing happened. We need to address that.
So he's on this and people are getting, shut up, you guys, right?
That okay.
He's a criminal, right?
Fix it.
That was a criminal.
And they're yelling at him. Then he stops for a moment, goes back to the thing they have in common again. It is really, it's an unbelievable moment.
Very good.
All right.
But labor
that's from that intense. Book I'm reading right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, that's good, man. Keep reading.
Is Rachel coming back after yesterday's?
Yes.
Okay. It's always, I always feel like we're mixing nitroglycerin whenever we have her on. Get that feeling?
Right.
Yeah. Having parts of nitro? Break back.
In an improv setting.
What does Muckleshoot Bingo do when we don't do the know-it-all quiz? We should have written the know-it-all quiz for today, right?
Yeah, we forgot about that.
I did my movie review. What's wrong with you?
Is it too late?
Well, you do the movie review because you splatter that thing on the morning show, the afternoon show.
That's right.
The show
and the evening. Yeah, you're right.
It's all over the place. Dora the Explorer.
Yeah, and the Lost City of Gold. It's hilarious. Done by the guy who did Flight of the Conchords.
Okay, fine. Novelty Casino. Comes to entertainment with Novelty Casino, and there's also
Dora the Explorer. I sit next to Tom, and it seems like he likes this movie more than he's liked any movie in the world. He's yapping his little yap over there about Dora.
Well, why don't you yap your yap about what's happening over in Rome?
I will. Well, I feel like we've been talking about this for years now, the fact that places around the world, especially in Italy, are just getting overrun by tourists. Not just Italy. I mean, you know, going to the Mona Lisa, people are literally getting trampled.
All right, goodbye. Thank you, Rachel. Sorry.
More time to talk about Dora.
Sorry, go ahead.
Ever since, remember I told you that I saw this water aerobics class happening and the opening song was Uptown Girl?
Yeah.
Now I have this very strong connection. So when you play that every time, I just see a bunch of older women's head bobbing above a pool.
Okay.
Very Pavlovian.
Did they ever, could you also see them bobbing in a fountain in Rome?
Nope, it's illegal, which takes me to my next point. So, yes, Rome has rolled out a bunch of new regulations in the city. You can get big fines if you do the things you say they can't do anymore. So one of the things is one of Rome's most popular tourist attractions. You can no longer sit on the Spanish Steps. Mm. The Spanish Steps were built in the 1700s. They connect the, oh God, can you say this, Tom? Trinita de Monte.
Yeah, I know who someone could say it.
As the rhythm of daily life hits its stride, the famous Spanish Steps, today adorned with azaleas, fill with people. For over 200 years, romantics have gathered here to enjoy a little dolce vita with their sightseeing.
What? You're letting
and
this
it remains
go?
A popular place to savor the joy of simply being in Rome.
A spaghetti.
Edmund's own.
Trinita de Monte. All right, so this is this big staircase built in the 1700s, and at the top is a beautiful church. But if you sit on the steps, it's going to be a $450 fine. This is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and in 2006, the luxury brand Bulgari, they paid €1.5 million to restore it. And now they're saying, just like, get off of the steps. The city is a living museum, is what they say. And they have police guards. Police officers that are actually going around. They haven't fined anybody yet, but they're giving out a lot of warnings. And when people argue, they say, you know, you think you're just one person. We see millions of people doing what you're doing. Like a guy was trying to, he was carrying a baby and he was dragging his stroller down the steps. And and they said, you know, don't let the stroller touch the steps. And the guy was arguing with him and he's like, you're not the only stroller. They're pointing out the fact that there's ice cream stains on the steps. So other things that you can't do. There are stricter penalties for graffiti. You can no longer wade in the Trevi Fountain, which I guess was something that was done in Fellini's La Dolce Vita.
Oh, yeah.
That's a $500 fine. You can't eat on the monuments because people spill stuff all over. You can't climb historic fountains. And there's tightened control on alcohol sales and consumptions. Let's see. Stricter laws on prostitution and mistreatment of animals, which sounds like a totally separate
I think
thing.
The worst is the fact that if you are dressing up like a Roman soldier with a plastic sword and a helmet and a leather breastplate and demanding money to have photos taken, those people are banned.
Oh, good. Those people are banned.
But you can still be Elmo or Spider-Man. So that's good.
So there's two camps. I think most people agree that you have to, you know, if you want these things to stick around, you have to go easy on them and you can't destroy them. But a lot of people say, you know, why is it there? Why would there be stairs if I can't walk on them? Yeah. And it makes me think of growing up. So in the house I grew up in, we had a kitchen table and we had a family room where we would sit and watch TV. And then we had the formal living room and the formal dining room. We were not allowed in those rooms. My mom would
never understood that.
Never let us sit on the couch. It was only for company. And I remember thinking it was so silly. Like, why do we have these rooms and this furniture that we're not allowed to sit on? Uh-huh. Which when I look back, you know, it was like the 80s. So when I think of it, it was like all really ugly, but it was probably very beautiful at the time. Mm-hmm. It was like country cabin with a flair of Japan because my parents went to Japan a few times. There were some fans in that room. But yeah, it's kind of the same thing. It's like, do you use it and just like let it go, or do you preserve it?
The problem is that there are too many of us. All these sites are getting overrun. When I traveled so long ago, like in the 70s, I could go up to the Acropolis in Athens, and we could walk through everything. Now it's all you know, cut off, and it's very strictly regulated. And the problem is it needs to be strictly regulated. There are two centuries of traditions of people sitting on those Spanish steps, and that was part of what the joy of those steps. But if it's true, if 10 million people sit on those steps and spill things and all this, they are going to go, you know,
Well, someone made a good point in this article. They said, you know, you couldn't walk around the Metropolitan Museum of Art, you know, slurping on a Coke and eating French fries. So what's the difference? And I think when it's outside, we just think of it differently.
It's,
but
it's
architecture, is a living museum.
Where do the steps lead to?
The church.
I think there's a church at the top.
Does anybody? But, so how do you get into the church?
Well, the thing is, there are other ways to get there. There are other roads. The steps are so steep. You can still use them. You just can't sit on them.
Yeah, you can't sit on them.
That's all. So you're just sort of blocking egress.
Oh, okay.
I think is how.
But you can still walk up and down the
steps. You can't put your dirty hiney on the steps. Yeah. Just your clean shoes.
Yeah. Speaking of dirty hiney, the 50th anniversary of the dirty hiney was celebrated just last week.
That's right.
And there's a piece that you weren't always necessarily so excited about, but I liked it.
Yeah.
It's that, why do we celebrate everything? It seems like everything has got an anniversary. The other day we talked about it on the air, that the 30th anniversary of
when Harry met Sally.
Right, like, why do we celebrate that? Why do we celebrate Woodstock?
Yeah, so this article is talking specifically about 1969, which was, yes, the year of the big hiney, but it was also the year that the Stonewall riots happened. That's when the big moon landing happened. It was when the Manson murders happened. Woodstock, the Beatles' last performance on the roof of Apple Records. A local thing that happened in 1969, the Boeing 747 jumbo jet made its debut. And so, yeah, this article wants to know, why is it? Why is it important to people to mark? And also not just to mark, but why is it always a round number, they wanted to know? You know, so it's 50 years, it's 30 years. They said, someone in the article said, something gets wiped out because it's not an even number. This was a weird example. They said, Hitler's assassination attempt was 51 years ago, so we don't pay attention to it. I don't know why we would sell. I don't think we're going to sell merchandise for that one.
Celebrations of 50 were through the roof, but 51 we ignored.
Just got ignored.
I don't think so.
So one of the criticisms is that corporations just use it to make products to sell you that you're going to buy because it's an anniversary. So, for example, it was the 50th anniversary of Stonewall. And so 5 million people attended the Stonewall celebrations it was in the last week of June. Mm-hmm. 130,000 more people were in that pride parade than other years just because it was the 50th anniversary. And there were corporate sponsors like T-Mobile, MasterCard, Macy's, Target. And so that was kind of the critique, was there was this, you know, a proud partner and sponsor of Stonewall 50. Like, is it being cheapened by corporate sponsors?
Well, we like even numbers. We like big even numbers. And so that's why you don't celebrate 18 years or 19 years.
Or Hitler's assassination.
51.
I mean, we celebrated that for the 20th year, the 30th year, the 40th year, and the 50th year.
It's just the next year.
You just couldn't do the 51st.
We don't care that somebody tried to kill him?
I bought the coolest t-shirt, though, to commemorate the 50th anniversary of his assassination attempt. It just had a little mustache on it. And a gun.
That's the nitroglycerin I was talking about, really.
That's right. The bell. It just went off.
Last thing I saw my check, Muscle Shoes Casino.
Not the assassination attempt. No, you.
That's the online Trading Academy text line. Another way to get to us as well is mynorthwest.com. And, of course, the Facebook page, taking pictures only of your disgusting pillows in order to win a MyPillow. By the way, the MyPillows are sitting at my desk, along with a bunch of other stuff sitting at my desk. Have you noticed how gross that area is getting? I'm waiting to get a letter from management telling me to clean up my space. you know, Jacob said to me today, it looks like your desk is becoming, what is it?
An escape room that you have to navigate your way out of every time you try to leave.
That's good.
It is already good, too.
Back yourself into a corner.
It was, according to the president, and this news broke last night, that Comey and the rest of those scumbags that put... what?
This is just... I was wondering why he was doing this, and I read deep enough into the article, oh, my God, you're not serious.
remember the governor of Illinois said, are you kidding me? I got a blanking pot of gold here. This thing is worth whatever it was. What was this famous thing?
I've got this, and it's effing gold. Yeah. I'm just not going to give it up for effing nothing.
Right.
It was an appointment to the Senate seat that Barack Obama had just left because he was elected president, and so the governor gets to name him. So he was basically taking, in effect...
Offers.
Offers. I was going to say bribes, but offers for who he should give it to.
Yeah, and he went to court, and Comey and the rest of the sleazebags sent him away. For how many years?
14 years. Convicted on 17 counts. Three or four of them were overturned on appeals, but still enough to for 14 years.
So poor Rob spends 7 in there, and now the president wants to does he want to pardon them all together?
Yeah, commute his sentence. So in effect, okay, you know, let him out now.
So you get out now. Last time these two met.
I just want to ask this one question. Your Harry Potter facts were not accurate. Who did the research?
I feel like I knew the product. In fact, I wrote a lot of the text. You know, I talked about the different houses. And I was the one who said houses and classes interchangeably because I was trying to be more explicit so people can get a concept.
Wow, this brings back such great memories. Do you remember where you were when Bolojevich, whatever his name was fired?
Of it, but it's Slytherin and it's Hufflepuff and it's Ravenclaw and it's...
But you keep losing and you're running out of people.
Right.
And you're the project manager.
Right. I know.
Yeah, right, yeah. And Governor, I have great respect for you. I have great respect for your tenacity.
But...
for the fact that you just don't give up. But Rod, you're fired.
Oh, that was it. Oh my gosh, out he went.
And now you're pardoned. So
he's allowed to pardon him if he wants.
Yeah, he is. That's one of the weird things about what we offer the presidency. I think none of the powers of the presidency were in mind when, were considered if we had somebody like Donald Trump in power. I think Donald Trump says, "Hey, he didn't what he did isn't didn't do that. He didn't do that bad a thing because he himself probably doesn't know the rules of the road and might have done something very similar." Trump is very sloppy about playing by certain rules of conduct, and he figures, "Well, that's the big deal." I thought when they said, I was wondering, why would he want to commute it? Well, I didn't realize that in between his conviction and his sentencing, he went on the Celebrity Apprentice. So he knows him a bit, on that score. But also, yeah, ultimately, Blagojevich's wife, in the recent appeal for clemency, sought to portray his case as a trial run for the special counsel probe into President Trump's Russian connections because Robert Mueller was the head of the FBI at the time.
It's a poke in the eye of Comey.
Yeah. All right. And Mueller.
Yeah. And Fitzpatrick.